us out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I didn't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. This weekend, of course, the Russian Grand Prix in Sochi, which we are going to preview in just a second. Bit of breaking news, though, at the start of the podcast, as we're recording this. Former McLaren boss, Martin Whitmarsh, is going to be returning to F1. He's going to be overseeing Aston Martin's F1 team. He's basically going to be the chief executive officer of Aston Martin Performance Technologies. So that's a big statement, I think. I think, obviously, they're making some big signings and, you know, there's all sorts of talk that they want to expand and they want to bring new people into the team and stuff. Obviously, bought out Aston Martin, was it last year or the year before? So it's interesting. They're very serious, aren't they? They're bringing in some top guns and some previous winners and some previous big Formula One people. So that could bode well for their future.
Yeah, there was a rumour, which Christian Horner has quashed, that Adrian Newey, Formula One's most successful designer, may be going across to Aston Martin, but Horner says he's signed a new contract with Red Bull, so isn't going anywhere. The Aston Martin outfit is a weird one because I keep hearing rumours that Lawrence Stroll is a very difficult man to work for. He insists on perfection, and that not everyone's completely happy in that camp at the moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're a billionaire, I think you've got to be a bit like that to become a billionaire, haven't you? A perfectionist. And, you know, it's that kind of old school management style, isn't it? Ruling by an iron fist. And I think the world has shifted a little bit now. And I think that style is very grating these days. I'm not sure many people get on with it. And obviously with the, you know, the importance of mental health these days, a lot of people don't like that kind of management style. But yeah, you do get the impression that he, like you say, wants everything done perfectly, wants everything done now. And so that it can work good ways. It can work bad ways. It's, you know, it's be interesting to see. But yeah, I'm hearing similar stories that he's not the easiest person in the world to work with or for.
Let's go back to the championship then. Obviously, Lewis versus Verstappen. We had a crash last time out in Italy. Most of the experts think a crash is likely again. And, you know, Russia is a track that we go to this weekend that could see that because there's a very tight turn two, isn't there? It's actually turn three, I think. And then some twisty infield parts of that circuit, which could make it interesting for overtaking. Mercedes traditionally do really well at this circuit. Red Bull, obviously, Max has a grid place penalty from his crash that he was blamed for in Italy. Lots of people coming out and saying, including Red Bull, of course, and they would, that he should have got the same penalty as Lewis got for causing the accident in Silverstone. So Lewis got a 10-second penalty. Max got a three-place grid drop. And we've discussed this before on the podcast. Max is almost certainly going to need to take a new engine before the end of the season. Do they do that in Russia so they combine it with a grid penalty and he basically starts the race from the pit lane? I suppose you only really want to do that if you can make up places in the race itself, don't you?
Yeah, it's a tough call. I've seen that accident a few times since, and they've got like the kind of CCTV cameras on the car that swivel round, and I've seen it from pretty much every angle. And it really, for me, depends on what angle you watch it. Like sometimes I go, oh no, that was Lewis's fault. Other times I go, oh no, that's Max's fault. Other times I'm like, it's a racing incident. And it literally depends on what angle you watch the incident at, I think. So, I mean, I feel like they had to give someone a penalty for that because they've got to sort of do something to stop this from happening too often in the season. But again, you know, we look back at classic seasons in the past with Senna, Prost, for example, you know, and even Hamilton and Rosberg. You know, they had comings together, they had crashes. There was that famous one with Senna, of course, at the start line where it's, you know, it's happened immediately. And, you know, these famous seasons have always got these clashes. And I think this is going to go down as a bit of a ding-donger this year. And it will be looked back upon, you know, in years to come. And, oh, do you remember this season when this happened? And do you remember when Hamilton and Max were fighting like this? So I think it's great for the sport. And, you know, sometimes I'm sitting there watching the Formula One and it is very samey and processional and all that kind of stuff. But when something like this does happen, you jump out of your seat and you're like, oh, here we go. There's another crash. As long as everybody's safe and everything's fine and everybody's healthy at the end of it, it's good to see a bit of drama. But yeah, it's a funny one. And like you say, he's getting a grid drop anyway. I guess it depends where he qualifies, doesn't it? It depends on where he qualifies and how the Red Bull is set up and can the Red Bull overtake in the race, do they think? And there's so many variables. I mean, they know stuff that we don't know that they're obviously going to be looking at the weekend. But yeah, it's an interesting one because it could be an opportunity to take that new engine. Do you take a punt? Do you go, listen, let's change it? Or do you pick a track where you go, listen, we cannot win at this track. We've got no chance of winning. Let's change the engine here. and we'll do it this way because we just can't win this race anyway. You know, there's so many things, so many smarter people than us thinking of all these decisions.
Yeah, the more I watch that Monza crash, the more I think the main culprit was the curbs. You know, Lewis pushed Max wide, but it was the hitting the curbs for Max that sort of bounced him into the air and caused him to land on top of Lewis. That was the main culprit, I thought. It was a bit of... It was 50% for me, really. I can't really make out who was to blame, but obviously they blame Max, and the FIA have probably much more data than we have, thought that they should have given each other a bit more room. You know, Max could have got that overtake done further around the lap, but he knew that Lewis was coming out of the pits on fresh tyres, and that was obviously an option that Max didn't want to explore, because Lewis was on the slightly faster tyre at that time and could have got away from him on that lap. So he obviously wanted to go for it and go for it quickly.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have you done that go-karting where you've done a bit of a dodgy overtake and the first thing you think is, where are the marshals? Did they see that or did I get away with it? And then you have that little smirk behind the helmet, don't you, where you think, I got away with that and that was a bit naughty. You know, and it's kind of like they can't do that because there's cameras everywhere, there's telemetry everywhere. They see and hear everything, don't they? So they can't get away with those sort of things. But I think we've all been there where we've gone, oh, shouldn't have really done that, but I got away with it, I think, because the marshal didn't see it. But yeah, different gravy for them, of course. But I'm the same as you. I watch it from all different angles and I come to a different conclusion every time I watch it. So I feel like three grid places is a little bit harsh, but at the same time, they needed to punish someone, I guess, to stop that kind of thing from happening every single race.
McLaren obviously still on a high after Daniel Ricciardo's win in Monza and a second place for Lando Norris, which was great, and his highest finishing position ever in Formula One. Daniel Ricciardo apparently went to bed. The rest of the team partied long into the night in Italy, and he went, nah, I've had enough, and went to bed. But that, I suppose, shows what a serious athlete he is, despite the constant joking and smiling. They must feel confident, McLaren. You know, they've certainly stepped up their game throughout this season. They started it really well with the opening races, and they've stepped it up. They've kept it going, and obviously with the rule changes that we all talk about for next year, you know, you could have four teams fighting for the championship next year. There's nothing to say that Mercedes are going to continue their dominance, because, you know, it could be a completely different team that does that. If you look at even down to the Haas, that haven't developed their car at all this year, all their concentration has been on the 2022 rule changes. You never know, they could be up there. So I think these changes combined with many drivers like Ricciardo, who's experienced and seasoned, then combined with the young guns that are coming up through the ranks, which we love watching so much, the likes of George Russell going to Mercedes and the likes of Lando Norris, who are these sort of modern whiz kids who grew up playing simulator games. So before they even got into a Formula One car, they had experience. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's going to be a really interesting start to the season next year.
Yeah, I'm just actually literally looking at Lando Norris's Twitter page as we speak, and he's tweeted a couple of hours ago, it's been 7 years since I won the World Karting Championship with OTK and RFM. It feels like yesterday. And then he's put four pictures up. He looks like 7 or 8 years old in these pictures. He's tiny in these pictures. And it's him. He's got exactly the same face, but like a little scaled down version. He looks like a little cheeky chappy. But yeah, 7 years ago he won that. And look at him now in Formula One. I mean, like you say, they had a tremendous weekend. I feel like they're getting, if you look at their run over the last few years, each year they're slightly better in points. And this year they've really hit the sweet spot. I think they've got a great set of drivers. I think the car is hitting a lovely sweet spot as well. The engine's obviously good, as we know, because it's the Mercedes. You know, the whole package seems to be kind of working well. They've made some new appointments. You know, Zach at the top of the pile. It goes back to what we were saying earlier. Zach seems the opposite type of manager, where he's fun and hugs his drivers and, you know, high-fiving his team and well done, guys. And he seems like a very morale kind of boss, a bit like Toto as well, I guess. But you see a lot of that. And I think that does, you know, that does kind of weed itself down into the team, doesn't it? I think when you've got a boss that's a bit fun and, you know, he's a former racer himself, he loves to go out in the cars and race them and he loves to race against the drivers. And when you've got a boss that has fun and enjoys himself and, you know, that kind of atmosphere just transcends into the team. I think Red Bull have always been a bit like that. You know, when they're clearing up the cars at the end, they've got the music playing and stuff. And I think that is a big kind of secret. And is that where Aston Martin might become a bit unstuck, where they get a bit of a serious management team? I mean, Martin Whitmarsh is, you know, a nice guy, but quite a serious guy from what I remember when he was at McLaren. So again, is that going to be a very serious kind of management team, which is, you know, do you need a bit of fun in that team to kind of get the winning back again? But McLaren just seem to have nailed it. The appointments they've made, the drivers they've got now, the package, the car, the engine, this, you know, they seem to be hitting that sweet spot. And like you say, I'm very excited to see what these teams all do next year, because there could literally be, it could be anyone's game, couldn't it? Mercedes could go from, you know, winning every title up until now down to like sixth or seventh best car on the grid next year. You just don't know, do we?
No, and I think, you know, as we look towards this weekend in Russia, it depends which teams turn up with which packages, you know, because we've seen lots of inconsistency in the Ferrari over this season. It's fourth. They are fourth in the Constructors' Championship at the moment, 14 points behind McLaren. Alpine, you know, are up there on 95 points as well. But Alpine and Ferrari and Aston Martin, some tracks they do really well at, some they're just absolutely nowhere. And I think Ferrari is probably the team that suffered from that inconsistency the most this season.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, again, I think they've got a great set of drivers. I'm sure it's their youngest driver lineup, I think, ever. It's definitely for a very, very long time. But they've got good drivers and they've got all the good potential stuff there. But, you know, for a team like Ferrari to have not won a race as long as they have and to not been at the top and to not be the top team for so long is bizarre. And I feel like, you know, next year they're going to be right back in it again, because again, when you've got that sort of manpower and that kind of money and just the name Ferrari, when you've got that behind you, you know, the oldest team in Formula One, they've got granddad rights. They have voting rights that no other team has still, you know, they are the leader of that whole entire Formula One grid in that sense. And they've got to get back up there. You know, it's been too long since they've had a car that wins or can win every weekend. You know, those glory days are long behind them and they need to get that back again.
Yeah, Kimi Raikkonen, who retires at the end of the season, was their last world champion back in the noughties, the early noughties. And, you know, yeah, they got to be a team that are expecting more in 2022. They've got to be, or there's almost no point in them competing, because Ferrari is designed to win. You know, that's the whole mentality of the team, and we haven't seen that in recent years. Last year, you know, a disaster for the team. This year, they're doing slightly better. Mercedes always do well at the Russian Grand Prix. They like the circuit. They like the configuration. I think Lewis Hamilton is the only driver to have raced every single lap since the inaugural Russian Grand Prix at Sochi. And this is a track that they are expected to do well at, and Red Bull less so. So as we go back to our original point, will Red Bull decide to take the hit on an engine penalty this weekend because they're not going to qualify that high? Or is it a track where they think, you know, we can make up some spaces, so if we start from the pit lane, then we could still get into the points? And then it remains to be seen whether Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton especially need to take an engine before the end of the season. I've heard they do, or they probably will. And then you hear them saying, well, no, we probably don't. We can probably make the season on our allocation of engines. Again, Mercedes always play the mind games, don't they? So, you know, They say, oh, we're not developing this year. And then they sneak a little development part on. And they say, oh, we're on the back foot. And then they qualify in pole position. So they've always played the mind games and done the sandbagging Mercedes. It'd be interesting to see how they approach this weekend. We'll know when we see the drivers' press conference on Thursday and hear from the team bosses. You know, I expect Toto Wolff to come out and say, oh, it's not a good track for us. And just sometimes I get sick of that sandbagging, you know?
Yeah, well, here's the thing with that, because this is an actual fact for you. Mercedes, undefeated in the Russian Grand Prix since 1913. You wow. Heard that correct, because St. Petersburg in 1913, Mercedes-Benz won. 1914, they won. And then there was not a race held until 2014, which was Lewis won in 14, Lewis won in 15, Nico Rosberg won in 2016, Valtteri Bottas won in 17, 18 was Hamilton, 19 Hamilton, and Valtteri Bottas won last year. So Mercedes unbeaten at the Russian Grand Prix since 1913. So if they come out this weekend and go, yeah, the car's not great here, it's not rubbish, come on now.
Yeah, and I think Valtteri Bottas is one to watch for the remainder of the season. He had a good race in Monza, put it on pole position, took the grid penalty, and then finished third on the podium. It seems now he's been announced that he's not going to be driving for Mercedes anymore next year. He seems to, like, the pressure seems to be off. It seems to have lifted off his shoulders. He seems to be smiling a lot more, like, okay, I know what my future is. I'm going to drive for Alfa Romeo next year, so I'm going to enjoy the last few races I have in this amazing Mercedes car.
Yeah, I think the other thing with that is in his head, he's thinking, listen, I'm going to join Alpha next year and they're not expected to win for maybe 2 or 3 years. You know, that's how it works. You have a slow build up. So he's like, the pressure is completely off now. I've got 4 years potentially of Grand Prix racing with nothing to worry about, nothing to fight for. We're not going to be world champions. I'm not going to be the world champion driver, you know, so I can relax and enjoy it. And like you say, he's flying last weekend. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's like that for the rest of the season. Imagine the headache that's going to cause for Hamilton, you know, because if Max Verstappen isn't beating Hamilton and Bottas is, it's still taking points off Hamilton, isn't it? So again, Mercedes, are they going to start doing the whole, you know, Bottas, you've got to let Hamilton through, we need the points type thing because he's not going to be with them next year? It's embarrassing, isn't it, if Bottas wins all the races and wins the world title now? I'm not sure he's that close enough to be able to do that, but imagine that scenario. There's got to be something in place where Mercedes say, come on, Bottas, you know, I know you're leaving, but you've got to let Hamilton take these main points. But that's going to be a tough one for Hamilton if Bottas gets his stuff together and Max is all over him as well.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, is Bottas going to play the team game and move over when asked, you know, between now and the end of the season? Just looking at the championship running then. So this weekend, the Russian Grand Prix, which, as we've already heard, suits the Mercedes car. Turkish Grand Prix, I love the layout of Turkey, Turn 7 especially. That is a mixture. So it should suit both Mercedes and Red Bull. United States Grand Prix, again, both cars should be suited to that because it's got long sweeping corners, fast high-speed corners that Mercedes love. Red Bull excels at the low-speed corners, and it has a bit of that too. So does Mexico. Sao Paulo, we know, has a very tight infield section. The Brazilian Grand Prix will suit the Red Bull without a doubt. We've got November the 21st still to be announced, so we don't know which circuit they're going to go to. Saudi Arabia, have you seen the simulator runs on the Saudi Grand Prix? It looks like an amazing circuit. They've got sort of an arena bit in the middle and an overpass with lounges and stuff, and the track runs underneath it. But ultimately, it's an incredibly fast track, so I think Mercedes will do well at Saudi. And Abu Dhabi, the final race of the year on December 12th, they've redesigned the circuit to make overtaking better. So they've got a really sharp hairpin into the long back straight, and they've got rid of that niggly little chicane at the end of the back side of the circuit to make it more of an open corner. So we're hoping for more overtaking in the final race of the season because it has been a bit dull over the years. But again, you know, some slow speed corners that suit the Red Bull and some fast straights that suit the Mercedes.
Yeah, it's anyone's game. I did see an interesting comment this week from Alonso where he basically said he thinks that this is Max's title to lose, which I thought was fascinating. Head games from Alonso, unusual, not. And also he said that Max is probably the only person he wouldn't want to be the teammate of at the moment. He said, if you go into that team, into Red Bull as Max's teammate, he said the team is kind of set up around Max. The car is set up around Max. Max is on great form. And he said, Max, in my opinion, is probably the best in the field at the moment. So, you know, high praise from Alonso to Max Verstappen. Is that a bit of Alonso mind games as well for Hamilton? Because Hamilton's obviously going to see and read that. And we know from the past that once you get properly into Hamilton's head, because it's what Rosberg did, that's the way to beat him. You know, it's hard to beat him on pure talent, pure skill, pure driving on the track. It's doable, but it's not, you know, it's not easy. Whereas if you get in his head, it's easier, it appears. And he does seem a driver, Hamilton, that is affected by, you know, not winning every race. And if you start getting the upper hand, he does have a bit of a wobble, doesn't he?
He does indeed. We head into the Russian Grand Prix this weekend. And before we get there, we're going to hear the stats from Nicky at Lights Out. He's got all the facts on this weekend's Grand Prix.
Mercedes are looking to maintain their 100% win record in Russia, while Hamilton is hoping to maintain his record of completing every lap at the Sochi circuit. Here are the top facts and statistics ahead of the 2021 Russian Grand Prix. Mercedes have never failed to win the Russian Grand Prix since the Sochi circuit joined the F1 calendar in 2014. The team have scored 4 1-2 finishes at the circuit, but a 1-2 result this year looks less likely. At the Italian Grand Prix, McLaren became the first team to take a 1-2 result so far in 2021. The last time any team achieved the feat was at the 2020 Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, 17 races ago. That's the longest gap between 1-2 finishes for any team in F1, since there was a 17-race gap between a team finishing in both first and second places at the 1996 Portuguese Grand Prix and the 1997 European Grand Prix. 370 racing laps have been completed in Sochi so far, and there's only one driver who has completed every racing lap at the circuit. That driver is Lewis Hamilton, who has recorded 4 Russian Grand Prix victories and has never finished further than 36 seconds behind the race winner. Other drivers to have completed almost every lap are Kimi Raikkonen and Valtteri Bottas, who have each only lost one lap at the track, and Sergio Perez, who has failed to complete only two laps at the circuit. Daniel Ricciardo recorded McLaren's first win in 9 years at the Italian Grand Prix, but he could take a more unwanted accolade this weekend. Ricciardo currently shares the record for most retirements at the Russian Grand Prix with Romain Grosjean. The Australian could record a record-breaking fourth retirement here this weekend, while Sebastian Vettel or Carlos Sainz could equal the existing tally. Meanwhile, if Vettel, Sainz, Fernando Alonso or Lance Stroll are out on the first lap, they'd equal Nico Hülkenberg and Romain Grosjean's shared record for most first-lap retirements in Sochi. And finally, the 2021 Russian Grand Prix will be the fifth race to be held on September the 26th, and Russia will become the fifth different country to host a race on that date. Previous Grand Prix on September the 26th have taken place in Portugal, Germany, China and Singapore. In all four previous races on this date, the driver who won the race failed to go on and win that season's World Championship title. All four pole sitters also failed to win the title in the year in which they took pole for a race on this date.
Interesting stuff. Once again, you can follow him across the race weekends at Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter for loads of stats and facts. And some very exciting news about all the races. I feel like this weekend is going to be a Mercedes track. I feel like because of the grid penalty that Max Verstappen's got, I think it's going to be a Hamilton win. I'm going to say Bottas for pole, Hamilton for the win, and I think Sergio Perez second, and I'm going to go for Ricciardo third, Bottas fourth is what I'm saying. I feel like race-wise, I don't know, I just don't think Max Verstappen's going to be up there for the win because of his grid penalties, and I feel like Hamilton's going to win it, but I just don't think I can see Hamilton on pole.
Yeah, I'm going for the final result on Sunday. I'm going Hamilton for the win, Bottas in second, and Perez in third. Perez doesn't qualify very well, but he looks after his tyres in a race and does phenomenally when it comes to overtaking and chasing the pack down. So I think Perez is going to be on the podium this weekend, and about time too.
We will be back to have a little look back at Sochi and find out if there's any dramas and excitement to report back on this time next week. Have a great week. Enjoy the race. We'll see you next Tuesday.
It's lights out and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sandy have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 podcast. Two soft compounds.